From the book of Hebrews, chapter 10, verse 23. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And from chapter 11, beginning at verse 13. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come, they would have opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. And from chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be unto God. There is a continuing debate among Bible students, among scholars who study such things, about the authorship of the book of Hebrews. And at one time or another, just about everybody in the New Testament has been named as a possible author of that book, of that letter. We don't have a clue from its writing. Most of the time it's attributed to the Apostle Paul, but those who know Greek say that the Greek in Hebrews is so different from the way that Paul writes in the other letters that we know he wrote, that he signed, that he may not have been. But what we know for sure is this was written by a Hebrew to other Hebrews, telling the Hebrews to stop acting like Hebrews. Now here's the setting. The author is addressing a group of Christians, perhaps living in Rome, about AD 70. And the dilemma they are facing is to give up the Christian faith and to go back to Judaism. And the reason they were facing that is multiple. There's more than one reason, but basically you can look at two. One is when they converted to Christianity and left Judaism, their families would have put them out. They would have either physically put them out of the house, they could have physically shunned them, excommunicated them from the synagogue. And if they didn't do it physically, they could have do it with just words and deeds. And to be excommunicated from the synagogue by Jews at that time would have been at the worst, one of the worst things that could have happened to them. Because it would have been a break from all the family, all the religion. And in some cases, the family would have held a funeral service and declared them to be dead. And the second risk they faced when they converted to Christianity was that they are now part of a religion that is outside of the protection of Judaism, outside the protection of the Hebrew religion, and subject to the persecution of Rome. While they're in Judaism, while they're members of the synagogue, while they're following the old traditions of the old faith, they're protected. Rome had given protection to the Jewish religion. Now they're outside of it. Now they're subject to persecution. And so many of them are faced with the possibility, with the temptation, with the almost urgent need to consider, do I go back to Judaism and leave Christianity? Because of what's happened with my family, sometimes with my work, certainly with my religion, and even potentially with my life. And the pressure is subtle. In chapter 10, verse 25, that we did not read, the writer says, let us not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. The temptation was not to outwardly make a boastful claim, I'm leaving Christianity, I'm through with that, I'm going back to the old way, but simply to stop associating with Christians. And especially to separate themselves from that Sunday worship that Christians made their day of worship. The Jews worshiped on Saturday. That was the Sabbath day. And Christians following the resurrection of Christ on the first day of the week began worshiping that day. The temptation is stopping celebrating Christian faith in worship and association with other Christians and just kind of simply slide back. You don't have to make a formal renunciation. Just stop gathering with them. And as I said a moment ago, a refusal to do that would result in excommunication. And with the Romans, the possibility of persecution and execution if you're following this rejected faith in Jesus of Nazareth. And the writer of Hebrews has to convince them how to stay in Christianity, faithful to Christianity, faithful to Jesus, in spite of what they are facing. And his argument is not fulfilled, but better than. He argues that Jesus is better than Judaism. If something's fulfilled, that means A has come along and replaced B. It's filled it up, it's replaced. What he's arguing is Jesus is better than. It assumes the validity of Judaism because at that time, almost every Christian had been a follower of Judaism. Jesus was a Jew. And they all came out of the synagogue. They all came out of that style of worship. And so his argument is Jesus is better than. We have found something better. It's gone beyond where Judaism cannot go. And so he says, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. Now, with this argument made, and with an earlier declaration that we have a high priest, back in chapter 4, that we have a high priest who is touched with all of the feelings of our infirmities, who has experienced what we have, everything that we have, yet without sin, and has invited us to come boldly before the throne of grace so that we can find mercy and help in time of trouble. Because of that, because we have this high priest, because he's passed through into the heavens, and because he knows exactly who we are and exactly what we're experiencing and have experienced, and he knows how we feel, and he suffered the temptations we have and has resisted them, he says, you can make it. Because Jesus is with you. And then he gives a list. Chapter 11 is called the Roll Call of Faith. Of people who have followed God. Who have trusted in the way of the Lord. Even though they were full of faults and failures and shortcomings and even outright sin. But they are the ones who have been listed And after the writer lists all of these, and I'm going to mention a few of them in just a moment, he says, and there's so many more that time won't give us to talk about all of them. These become the role of faith. These become the examples for them and for us. Listen to a couple of them. Noah, the builder of the ark, saver of humanity. Noah got off the boat, planted a vineyard, harvested grapes, made wine, and got drunk as a skunk. But he's listed as one of the heroes of faith. Abraham, the father of Israel, moved out in faith. He didn't form a study committee. He trusted God, not knowing where God was leading him, and became the father of Israel. And yet, two times, he passed Sarah off as his sister in order to save his own neck. Sarah, mother of the faithful, mother of Israel, she encourages her husband to make a baby with another woman, and when the younger woman begins to show out, Sarah lost her grace and demanded that that woman and her son be put on the road. Isaac, son of promise, almost offered as a burnt offering. Like his father before him, passes his wife Rebekah off as his sister in order to save his neck. Jacob, the father of the 12 tribes, deceived his father, stole from his brother. Moses, the deliverer, the man who led Israel to freedom through Egyptian bondage to the sore shores of the promised land, murdered a man and later in arrogance hit a rock with his staff that God had told him only to speak to. Rahab, who saved the lives of the spies when they came on an espionage mission to Jericho. You would not have found her name on the Sunday school attendance chart with stars beside of her name for attendance, because this lady was a professional prostitute and would not have counted. And on the list goes. Samson, filled with the Spirit of God, trifled with the Spirit, despised the gifts that God had given him. David, writer of the Psalms, slayer of Goliath, Israel's greatest king, and only one word to show where David went wrong, and that's the name of a woman, Bathsheba. But yet the writer of Hebrews says they all walked when they could not see clearly. They didn't sit around thinking about what to do. They acted on what they knew. And with all their flaws, all their ups and downs, their stops and their starts, God used them. And He offers them as encouragement to these who are facing persecution and worse. And then He takes them into the stadium. That's chapter 12. Where He says, we are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. Our lives are on the field in a stadium. If you've watched any kind of athletic competition, somewhere along the line, if you've watched long enough, you have heard an announcer talk about the home team's advantage, the home field advantage, the crowd in the home field stadium. And they call the crowd, in football, they call them the 12th man. Rooting, cheering, encouraging. And the writer of Hebrews says the people in the stands are the ones that have gone before us. They're participating in what's going on by cheering us on. They've lived in the past. They've overcome all of these temptations. They were as warped as we are, but they're still in the audience, still participating, and we're surrounded by them, cheering us on. And so he says, let us run with patience. Now, if you've ever been a jogger, and I ran one time for a little bit, it's the most boring thing I have ever done. If you jog long enough, and I don't think I ever jogged long enough, but if you jog long enough, I'm told that you experience something that's called hitting the wall. People who run marathons, that 27-mile race that I just can't imagine, will reach a point where they don't think they can go a single step farther. They feel like their legs are going to give away. They're dehydrated. The oxygen isn't getting to their brain. And some of them have testified to thinking thoughts like, I wish a truck would run over me and put me out of my misery. It's so awful. I've hit the wall. I can't go any farther. And it's only with encouragement. People shouting, the people cheering, come on, you can make it, you can make it, that they continue beyond the wall. And the writer of Hebrews says, you're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses who are cheering you to keep running, a host of runners who finish the course. They know what it's like, they know what you've been through, they know what you're experiencing. They've hit the same wall, and they're telling you, keep running. Keep going. You can make it. And the best proof of that is the fact that God became man in the person of Jesus. And He hit the wall when He was running the course that had been set out for Him. That wall was in Gethsemane. You remember the scene. He'd come this far. He was 33 years on earth. He'd been ministering for some 3 years with great popularity and also great rejection. And He's almost there. Only the cross lies ahead, and that's the reason for which He came. And that night in the Garden of Gethsemane, in such anger that His sweat became great drops of blood, He said, Father, from eternity, we've planned it this way, but right now, if there's any other way, let this cup pass from me. And He prayed that prayer 3 times. Greatest prayer that's ever been prayed, to which the answer was no. And He hit the wall, and He prayed that prayer, and He said, nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. He said, let's stop here. Let's do something else. Let's figure out another way. And then He says, not my will, but thine be done. And He finished the course. He carried the cross. And He died for us. And He's one of the witnesses, calling out to us when we are discouraged, when we're disappointed, when we're facing a situation we don't think we can handle and wonder how we're ever going to get through it. You can make it. You can make it. We've made it, the crowd cries out. Keep running. You can make it. You don't think you can? There's a whole host of witnesses calling down, get up, keep going. We've been there. We hit the wall. But we made it because of the strength and the grace of God given to us. Folks, we don't have an academic God. We don't have an academic Christ. We have a living Lord who became flesh, who knows what it's like to experience what we are experiencing and continued all the way through. He didn't think He could go one step farther. He did. We think we can't go one step farther. He calls back, you can. I give you the power. That's the wonder of Christ. Put aside anything that trips us up, the writer of Hebrews says. Any excess weight, throw overboard everything that would hold you back. I remember reading one time a report about a track meet, in which the athletes who were running the race were called the thin clads. And if you've ever watched a track meet, you know they wear as little garment as they can to stay modest. Nothing else to hold them back. Nothing else to hinder them. The thin clads. Throw aside everything the writer of Hebrews says, that would weigh you down, that would trip you up. And the one who ran before us, who endured all we had, who suffered all we have, is with us. And these folks who are the witnesses cheering, they made it home. And their testimony is, we can too. The hope is to run the race with power and endurance, to follow the pioneer, the author, the finisher of our faith who ran before us. They don't discount the difficulty. They know the difficulty. Christian life is grueling. We don't fit into this world. But we can make it because Jesus is out there and He endured. And these folks I named a few minutes ago, with all their faults and all their failures, became overcomers. And they're part of the crowd cheering us on. And we have this company of saints who made it, cheering for us. Keep running. You can make it. You can finish. Don't quit now. The goal is almost in sight. The finish line is almost within reach. Don't quit now. Be encouraged.